And I guess what's also really changing is the new consumer who is coming, right? So we developed model farms and training centers in Indonesia first, followed by China, now two in India. There's a concept called as One Health, which says that animal welfare, animal health, and human health are all linked to one another, and welfare sits in the center of it. So
hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, and of course, the little joys of life and work. It is as much about their personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial, professional and philanthropic journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, moneycontrol.com and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. In this episode, we are going to talk about something that is deeply embedded in our lives and is also the fount of our lives, which is food. Food businesses are increasingly held accountable not just for what's on the plate, but also for where the ingredients have been sourced from. The global shift to more ethical and sustainable sourcing highlights the need to secure supply chains now. India is the world's second largest egg producer, but much of the traditional farming here relies on battery cages. Industries and corporates are striving to adopt responsible food production practices in the face of rising awareness and environmental benefits of cage-free production. Global Food Partners is a global consultancy helping food businesses drive this change. On the show today, we have Jayasima Nugehalli, who as the co-founder and chief program officer of Global Food Partners conceptualizes, plans, and implements key initiatives to promote higher welfare production systems in the food sector. He spearheads the development of innovative traceability and supply chain solutions for animal source protein. In addition, he liaises with senior staff stakeholders and donors to ensure that the organization's support structure is driving operations forward with minimal expenditures. Welcome to the show, Jayasima. Delighted to have you here.
Thank you so much, Gaurav. It's a pleasure to be on this show.
Jayasima, can you talk us about your entrepreneurial journey in co-founding and scaling Global Food Partners across Asia? Was there a trigger? Was there a moment when you felt that you need to do something? What motivated you to walk this path, Jayasima?
Thanks so much, Gaurav. Before I delve into that, just for the understanding of your listeners who might be new to this whole concept, you know, in your introductory paragraph, you spoke about battery cages. What battery cages really are. So most of the world's commercial egg-laying hens are confined in what's called as battery cages, where they're given less than an A4 sheet of space their entire life. So just imagine being confined in this cage for their entire life. These birds can't stand up straight, turn around, spread their wings, perch, lay egg in a nest box, everything that is really important to them from an animal welfare point of view. And there has been a growing global momentum led by animal welfare commitments by large food companies who have said that, you know, looking at the consumer expectation that just sourcing eggs from these farms is cruel and it's not acceptable from a consumer's point of view, and they have made a pledge to transition to cage-free. And that's where our inspiration really comes from, because we saw that a lot of these global companies had made commitments around the world, like therefore their entire operation to transition from conventional battery cage produced eggs to cage free eggs. However, when we saw their implementation in Asia, for multiple reasons, they were unable to implement this commitment in Asia, or where they implemented it was really small. And we found an opportunity, and Elissa Lane and myself, the two co-founders, we founded Global Food Partners, a consulting based in Singapore. And what we really do is work with food companies who are looking to source cage-free eggs, link them up with farmers. And on the farmers, we work on farm, provide technical support so that these farms are able to successfully transition to cage-free. So we work on both ends of the supply chain. So the trigger point was that cage-free eggs provided an opportunity for us to demonstrate animal welfare and sustainability in the food supply chain. And the opportunity that we really saw was that there wasn't a consulting that was working on both ends of the supply chain in emerging cage-free markets such as Asia, and we wanted to capture that opportunity. Gaurav?
You know, Jasima, just to change tack a bit, there has been a gradual global shift to cage-free supply chains. Many individual countries banned battery cages before a collective decision was taken by the EU in 2012. That was 14 years ago. What has been the evolution of cage-free egg production in India and also Asia, across Asia? Speak to us about the challenges of transforming food supply change to a more ethical and sustainable one. Jasima?
Thanks, Gaurav. So, depending on which country you're looking at, we see in some places the corporate change drove the legislation. In some places, it can be that the legislation drove the whole industry's change. But one common theme that we see in animal welfare and sustainability, that it's the corporate that changes first, then the market kind of adopts to what the corporates really want, and then the legislation follows. So if you look at the United States, where now 40% of its flock is cage-free, the initial traction started off with companies such as Starbucks, Costco, McDonald's, all the large retailers as well as food service companies and restaurants making a commitment to transition to cage-free. What followed that were state-level bans, so be it California's proposition, which banned confining egg-laying hens in cages, but it also went ahead and banned the sale of eggs from cages in the state of California. Now, that's important because if California was a country, it would be in the top five in terms of GDP, right? So it sends a market signal. In India, the position has been that the legislation said that confining animals in a cage or receptacle, which does not measure adequately in length, breadth, or height to provide a reasonable opportunity of movement, is illegal. And this happened way back in 1960. But due to lack of state capacity and this issue being hidden, people don't necessarily see where their eggs are coming from, it's not been implemented. So the situation that we see in India is that on paper, battery cages are illegal, according to Section 11(1)(e) of the Prevention of Cruelty to the Animals Act, but it's not necessarily implemented on ground. And we want to start developing traction from the corporate commitments. And in different parts of Asia, legislation is far behind, and it is the corporate commitments that are driving. And again, Asia is not a monolith, every country being different. When you really come to challenge, I think one of the biggest challenges that we face in India specifically is that eggs are primarily sold in wet markets or unorganized retail like kirana shops. And when you have such a vast unorganized sector, it's really hard to bring in sustainability or animal welfare commitments through corporate commitments. And the corporate commitments, Gaurav, are a small fraction of the entire egg supply chain. Hence, corporates don't have the leverage to push the market in one particular direction. So to me, it seems like the way that the Indian egg industry is structured, which is very driven by wet markets and kirana shops, is one of the largest bottlenecks that we see for change. Gaurav?
Jasima, you know, are animal welfare, sustainability, and responsible sourcing becoming integral to corporate business strategies? Do you think now they do it not just as an add-on, but it is actually part of their essential strategic thinking? Or what is driving this change?
Yeah, 100%, Gaurav. What's driving the change is investors' expectation, because we started to see that from an investor's point of view that having poor animal welfare in the supply chain is a massive reputation risk, which can obviously hurt brand value overall. So there is definitely an investor pressure to start implementing animal welfare. There has generally been an evolution which says that animal welfare doesn't sit in isolation. There's a concept called as One Health, which says that animal welfare, animal health, and human health are all linked to one another, and welfare sits in the center of it. So as and when there is more awareness towards One Health, the concept of antibiotics resistance, it's a large public health crisis that we are staring at, that's driving the change towards animal welfare as well. And I guess what's also really changing is the new consumer who is coming, right? The consumer who is now starting to get their first paycheck, born in 98, 2000. They have access to cell phones, access to social media. They're so much more aware and they're curious to know where their food is coming from. And hence, food businesses are future-proofing their supply chains so that they're answerable when the consumer asks. So it's becoming a really, really integral part of not just the CSR ESG conversation, but it's become a really integral part of procurement conversation as well. Gaurav?
Jaisimha, you have steered the development of model farms that employ modern food production practices. What goes behind creating commercially viable solutions that benefit not just producers, but also the businesses? Jaisimha?
Thanks. So the concept of these model farms and training center comes up because of a study that we did. We surveyed farmers who were existing cage-free as well as farmers who were caged and asked them what is one of their biggest bottlenecks to transition or expand their operation, depending on what production methods that they were using. And what really came off was that there was a need for capacity building. The farmers didn't know how to raise birds in cage-free. And it's a completely different system, right? As in, you have birds in cages, you have birds in cage free. The thought process of running a farm changes because birds interact with one another. Animal health becomes really important. Biosecurity becomes really important. And a lot of times, the traditional nonprofit organizations, especially the international organizations that operated in India and the region, their model was taking the farmers to Europe and showing them what cage-free is and bringing them back and say, well, now you can transition to cage-free. Farmers in most cases would be like, well, you folks have lost your mind. Asia is not Europe. There's no way we can do cage-free farming the way they do it in Europe. So they didn't really have a relatable role model. So we developed model farms and training centers in Indonesia first, followed by China, now two in India. Primarily because we wanted to create these relatable role models where farmers can go, see, understand what cage-free is. They're talking to a farm worker who speaks the same language, who comes from the same socioeconomic background as them. There's a relatable role model that they're able to go back and implement. And a lot of planning goes through to localize these solutions so that when the farmer sees doesn't seem alien or not attainable to them. Gaurav?
Jaisimha, can you share some lessons from the field? What have been your learnings while working closely with farmers and supporting the transition to higher welfare production systems, Jaisimha?
It's amazing. And again, farmers are not a monolith. But if I were to really bring this all down to few issues is that when a farmer is an egg farmer, like a conventional egg farmer, he's an egg farmer. So in a conventional farm, he's purely an egg farmer. When he starts setting up a cage-free farm, he becomes a hen farmer. So the focus changes from the eggs to the hen, right? From the product to the animal that's producing it. And the key differences that we saw was that a lot of times in India, farmers were averse to spending a lot of capital expenditure to set up farms. So we had to find local methods in which these farms could be set up without compromising animal welfare. There were also issues with relation to electricity. So many times, in a completely closed house system, you have a power failure, which is again not known in many other parts of the world. And equipment designers are not necessarily thought about it and built safeguards. They've built-in safeguards for like maybe one-off emergency power off, but they haven't really built safeguards for like load shedding that happens in India. So we had to develop methods in which when there is no electricity, the animals can still survive without any heat stress. So there's a lot of on-farm level localization that had to happen. There's also a lot of capacity building on biosecurity, asking farmers to wash their hands, use sanitizers when they're going in, not to go to one farm, like let's say a duck farm, and then walk into a chicken farm because that can have a security risk. So there's a major capacity building that needs to be done to farm. So in that sense, the localization has been that meet the farmer where they are, understand what their daily routine is, because a lot of time is getting them to unlearn what they already know, relearn the pattern of higher welfare farming and teach them. And that's only done when they have a relatable role model and somebody on farm providing that support. And we provide both of that. Gaurav?
Jasima, are there any nutritional advantages to cage-free eggs, Jasima?
So a lot of cage-free companies do make nutritional claims on their egg products, saying that, you know, it's better, so on and so forth. But from a pure science point of view, the nutritional value of an egg is directly proportional to the feed that you give the bird. So in many sense, if there is a conventional farm as well as a cage-free farm, and if the feed is equal, then there might not be a massive change in the nutritional ability. However, there is a kind of cage-free farming called free-range, where the birds are given outdoor access. When the birds are given outdoor access, they do consume a lot of other stuff like grass and insects and stuff like that. So there's obviously the nutritional profile is different. But what studies show is that while there may not be a direct nutritional element, there's a sensory element. So when consumers know that an animal source protein, be it meat or eggs, have come from higher welfare farms, when they eat them, they feel that it gets a better mouthfeel. Similarly, with relation to yolk, they feel like there is a better feel for it. So a lot of times when companies are making these commitments and implementing them, when they're talking about animal welfare, might be an undertone of nutrition, but it's mostly driven by the fact that these animals are taken care of well on the farm. Gaurav?
Jasima, talk us about cage-free credits. How does this work? You know, take us through it.
Sure. So one of the problems that we found in the supply chain itself was, you know, as I brought up before, most of India's, as well as Asia, in many parts of Asia, the supply chain was very fragmented. And the fragmentation could happen for multiple reasons. One could be dominance of middlemen, brokers overall. It could also be because in Indonesia, for example, just like thousands of islands, and it's really hard to move these eggs, similarly in the Philippines. So there were multiple issues. And when you really look at India, for example, most of the cage-free farms are present in south of India. And cage-free demand is spread across the country, right? So just getting these eggs from the point of production to point of consumption takes a lot of time, effort, and cost to segregate. So we thought that for animal welfare to be in the marketplace, it isn't necessary that the physical product has to pass through the entire complex supply chain. So the way it works is that you have a cage-free farmer. They produce cage-free eggs. They sell them in the open market as caged eggs. They give us the documentation that they have produced these cage-free eggs and sold them in the open market as caged eggs. Global Food Partners verifies them and we issue a credit. Companies who made a commitment to source cage-free eggs, but they are unable to for whatever reasons, continue to buy these caged eggs and will buy these credits to offset their use of caged eggs. So in that sense, it's a simple offset scheme. But when you really look at it from a market point of view, it provides the incentive for the farmer to transition without spending a lot of time and energy on the transaction cost. But what we believe is that over a period of time, as volumes increase, the transaction cost decreases and a farmer is able to transition away from selling credits to selling physical eggs. That's how the credit system works. Gaurav?
Finally, Jaisima, what's the future of sustainable food systems? What will it take to move the needle further on collaboration between corporates, producers, and the industry and other stakeholders too, Jaisima?
Thanks, Gaurav. I think this is a structural issue. When corporates stop looking at sustainability as just a pure CSR goal, but they need to make this as a procurement target. And a lot of times within companies itself, you have CSR, ESG, corporate communications who are making commitments, but they haven't really brought their procurement teams into confidence. And what we believe is for sustainability to actually act on the ground, the procurement team ends up being really, really, really important. So we need to work with that. The other issue is that the cage-free farmers don't treat them purely as a vendor. You treat them as a partner in transition. And that also means, like, if you're working on a cost as to how much you're buying these cage-free eggs, rather than just like having a transactional conversation, we suggest companies have like a cost-plus model. So where the farmer transitions to cage-free, opens up the books for them, the company pays the actual cost of producing cage-free eggs plus the premium. Companies also support these farmers through credits, our impact incentive system. So for us, what it seems that on an industry level, having a pre-competitive collaboration. In fact, Global Food Partners, in association with the Global Coalition of Animal Welfare, GCOW, is running an egg working group. And if any of the listeners are a part of the food industry and want to join, please reach out to us. So we already have Compass Group, Elior, Sodexo, who have joined this program, and we want to increase the membership there. So there's a pre-competitive collaboration. And what we also need is companies working with producers as partners and not just as vendors, and internalizing sustainability as a key part of procurement. I guess a lot of these needs to happen for sustainability to turn into purchase orders. But one thing is really clear, Gaurav. Any index that you see, it's clear that as income grows, people move away from the concept of just being worried about food security to food safety. People have become more curious as to where their food is coming from. The minute that curiosity comes in, they get appalled by the existing food system, especially on eggs, on how cruel it is. And India is in that amazing growth trajectory. And companies who are going to adopt sooner and have a food system that they can openly talk about are going to future-proof their supply chain and ensure that the consumers will come back to them. Gaurav?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jaisima, for taking the time out and sharing deep insights and perspectives on a range of issues. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us.
Thank you. I appreciate having me on this podcast. Thanks so much, Gaurav.
Thank you.